Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome back, and I am so very excited to introduce my special guest tonight, who flew in all the way from Dallas, Texas, to be here.
Just for this,
Mac. We have Jan Masterson.
Hi.
This is one of my best friends from college. We've talked about her and referred to her lovingly as Museum Jan.
Museum Jan.
Yes, or my friend who works in a museum. Jan.
And what am I when you're talking to her about me?
Mac.
Just Mac.
Just Mac. Who is that guy you do the radio with?
If I was thin-skinned, I'd be a little insulted by that.
That's Mac. Nope. So we're going to museum nerd out today. We are wrapping up the month of June, heading into July. So we've got a lot to get to.
And we do. So we're going to get right to it. But we will say it was not her fault. We had her scheduled once before.
We did.
And it was the weather.
Yep. She came to visit and there was an ice storm.
She was here. She was at your home.
And we couldn't.
But couldn't get to the microphones.
Right. It was not terrible. It was awful. It's like the beach is right there. It's so close. But we're not going to drive.
And since I am a technophobe, I could not figure out how to do a show remotely, but you being the communications person should have been able to. We did not solve this. We just kicked the can down the road and said you'd come back at some point.
Yes.
So. Well, and I think at one point there was a window where we were going to be able to record. And then Alana, you got the word that the roads were about to get bad. And I had to jump in the car and drive back to Portland.
Right.
Otherwise, I was going to miss my window to get to the airport.
That's right. It was a two attempt on that trip. I remember. Yes. Okay. I do remember that.
It was great. It's like, so, welcome to Oregon.
Third time is a charm. and I can already sense you are not going to be just a one-time guest.
Nope. She'll be back.
All right. So let's get right through the big history highlights really fast.
Okay.
These are the things that happen tomorrow. As always, icebreakers or a dinner conversation. June 30th. 1898, Winton Motor Carriage Company publishes the first known automobile ad.
Ooh.
In Scientific American using the headline, Dispense with a Horse.
Oh, those poor horses.
Poor horses. But you know, less horse manure on the streets.
True. Oh,
I'm always going to be a silver lining kind of guy. 1905, Einstein publishes his groundbreaking theory of relativity.
Oh, okay.
That guy seems kind of smart.
Kind of, yes. It was just a theory.
Yeah, I was going to Google jokes about the theory of relativity, but I ran out of time, and I knew I didn't want to waste valuable time. All right, 1908, a fury explosion rocks Siberia's Tunguska. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Probably not. Region, flattening 800 square miles of forest, believed to be caused by an asteroid or comet, it remains Earth's biggest cosmic collision in recorded history.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Right.
And okay. I think some people out there think it was aliens.
Oh, we like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. 1934, Hitler purges members of his own Nazi party in the Night of Long Knives. In the Night of the Long Knives, assassinating hundreds of Nazis whom Hitler believed had the potential to become political rivals.
Oh, yeah. That's the guy.
Not a nice guy, that Hitler.
Yeah.
Okay. 1938. I thought about this one being the history highlight. 1938, Superman first appears in DC Comics Action Comics series issue number one.
Oh, issue number one.
And if anybody has that issue, I would be happy to buy it from you and then I'll sell it and we'll split it.
So, there you go. That's a great offer.
I used to be a comic book geek. 1940, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife forms.
Okay.
Yeah. We like them, don't we?
We do.
Yeah. Okay. 1953, the first Chevy Corvette rolls off the assembly line.
It's a good one, too.
How do we feel about the Corvette?
I'm not a car person.
Have you been to the Corvette Museum?
I have not. Where is that?
Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Now, why do you know this?
I am originally from Nashville, and Bowling Green is not a far drive. Mm-hmm. It's very close to Mammoth Cave National Park as well.
Ooh.
So it's a nice little stop if you're going up to the caves. Mm-hmm. But the National Corvette Museum, oh gosh, maybe 8 years ago or so had a sinkhole open up in the middle of the museum, and some of the priceless Corvettes fell into the sinkhole.
I'm laughing, but I shouldn't be laughing at that. That's a tragedy, and as a museum, that would horrify me.
Exactly, yes. That was my first thought. Other people thought, oh my gosh, a sinkhole, and I thought, oh my gosh, the collection.
And here I am saying, sinking money, like putting your money in a sinkhole.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah.
It just seems, I've been in a few. I've had some people I know. Yeah, they just seem kind of too small and too low, and just, I don't know. Okay. I'd rather get a rocket ship.
but worth visiting the museum?
Yes, you can actually sit in a lot of the cars, so that's kind of cool. I'm not a car person, so I can't appreciate them for that perspective, but just to sit in a Corvette and see all the different knobs and things is kind of fun.
Is there a celebrity spokesperson, Mark Hamill? to show how old I am? Mark Hamill's finest work, Corvette Summer. All right, nobody knows what I'm talking about.
No.
1988, Brooklyn, New York dedicates a bus depot honoring Jackie Gleason for his role as bus driver Ralph Cramden in The Honeymooners.
Oh, okay.
I'm torn about this because I like Jackie Gleason, but I'm not really excited about the threats of physical violence against his wife.
No.
To the moon, Alice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's dated, right?
It is dated, but I've always liked him. I find him funny. I find his acting, if you want to call it acting, amusing.
Character acting, yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then I was going to have this as the history highlight. So it's actually out of order, but I switched and I skipped one. And I just made this decision about 4 minutes ago on the air here. So this was going to be. But 1906, U.S. Congress passes the Meat Inspection Act and the Pure Food and Drug Act. These laws came into effect in large part because of The Jungle, the book that was published by Upton Sinclair. Mm-hmm. That was really supposed to be about the working conditions.
Right.
But people were horrified because there were all kinds of things about, oh, this guy, Bob, lost his thumb and it just went right in the hamburger.
Ugh, gross.
And I was going to pick that because I've always said when people are like anti-government agencies, I'm sorry, I like knowing there's no thumbs in my sausage.
Yes.
So
that's your example to them.
It is.
I like that.
I mean, would you rather have things inspected or not inspected?
Yeah, so, inspected. Yes.
So I was going to make that one, but then I thought, no, actually a bigger impact on history, if I have to be honest with myself. 1925, Charles Jenkins, so this is the history highlight, Charles Jenkins is granted the U.S. patent for transmitting pictures over wireless. It's early television.
Yeah.
So you got to go with television.
I think so, of course.
But I'm more nervous than ever in asking this question. I usually say, am I wrong? And while I respect you, Alana, I'm a little more intimidated by our guest. Say, no, you've forgotten this one. Or this is far more impactful.
What do you think, Jan? Did he nail it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right.
Ooh, all right.
Well,
there's no transition there.
There isn't.
This is terrible.
We're going to talk. So this is, I have Jan Masterson. She and I met in college at the University of Miami when we were still teenagers, which is like unbelievable. Like
10 years ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And we also joined a sorority together. We were in the Zeta Tau Alpha, which is actually called a fraternity. Mm-hmm. I learned this year. And so we were sorority girls and friends, and we there was a group of us, five of us, that called ourselves the Fab Five. We still do to this day, but we did right away. And Matt can also appreciate this, but in college, Jan was our short friend.
I'm the shortest one of the five.
Of the five, Jan was the short friend.
Okay, how much difference is there between all five of you? What's the next closest person?
Probably you, yeah.
But we were tall. So we were a tall girl. I mean, and then we were from five different states around the country. So Jan came from Nashville, Tennessee. I was from Portland, Oregon. We had someone from South Florida, Michigan, and Indiana. And we became best friends, I mean, really pretty immediately within the first year or two, and then have been friends, very devoted friends ever since.
But through the sorority, not through like majors.
Correct. Oh, gosh, no. None of
no.
Well, only two of us had similar majors.
Right. Well, Kimmy and I did graduate from the School of Communication the University of Miami. But
because that seemed a bit of an odd overlap. But I'm not sure the educational background. So unless you want to go earlier than that, that's what I want to start with.
Oh, earlier than that.
Okay.
Oh,
then I'll wait.
Oh, that's even better too. So one of our girlfriends went to a boarding school in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And Jan went to...
I went to an all-girls school in Nashville. Also Reese Witherspoon's alma mater.
Oh, okay. That was worth going back for.
And a little overlap because she's not much older than us.
No, I was in eighth grade when she was a senior. Yeah. So I would see her at assemblies, but there is zero chance that she ever knew who I was. So,
and this is an all-girls private school. What's the name of it?
Harpeth Hall.
Harpeth Hall, which in Nashville or in Tennessee, it's very well known. I mean, this is a known private school.
And it does have historical roots. It started as Ward Seminary for Girls in 1850 or 1851.
I like the oldie-timey title.
Yes. And then, so it was a boarding and day school, very traditional for the time. By the late 19th century, early 20th, it had become Ward Belmont. It had merged. So Belmont University in Nashville is somewhat of an offshoot of that original school. Hmm. It closed in 1951, Ward Belmont did. And then there was a group of families who said, we still need a place of higher education for girls. And so they opened Harpeth Hall in 1951.
Amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool. So yeah, so it was a diverse group of girls that found ourselves. And so, yeah, and we're still friends. Jan actually left us. So she did not graduate from the University of Miami. Ooh. She went on to get her undergrad at University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Yes.
And then her master's in the history of decorative arts and design with a specialty in, are you ready for it, Mac? Historic house museums.
So you knew right away,
or
at some point, that history house museums.
Yes.
Where you wanted to be.
Yeah. My family traveled a lot, and we would always visit cultural sites when we traveled. So I was exposed to a lot of historic house museums growing up. That might have been where some of my early interest came from. But we had a family friend when I was in college who worked for a site in outside of Nashville in Franklin, Tennessee, called Carnton Plantation. And that was the first time I learned that you could actually be a museum professional.
And what age are you at this point when you 20? Experience that and think about it?
20, I think. 20, 21, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So prior to that, had history been anything you thought was a potential career when you're 15, 16? Or is that just something you like as part of your family vacations?
Yeah, no. History, I kind of thought of as boring. I actually went to the University of Miami to study physical therapy. That's where I started out.
And that didn't last very long.
That did not last very long.
Good choice.
And immediately started taking art classes at Miami, art history. And that's where I felt, oh my gosh, this is where I should have been all along. So,
but also quickly realized that because Miami is a private school, there wasn't a lot of area to grow in that field either. So she did have to leave us.
Yeah. At the time, Miami's art department was in the old, I may have part of this wrong, but in the old Marine barracks on the campus.
Right. Yes.
So the rumor was that in the boys' bathroom, the urinals had like a bubble shape at the top to fit their old diving helmets. That, now that I'm saying all of this out loud, that sounds like complete lore. I never was daring enough to go into the boys' bathroom.
Did you go in to investigate to make sure?
No.
So, because I'm fascinated by this, I don't think I had more than one history teacher in middle school or high school that was inspirational or interesting.
I would agree with that.
And I liked history because it was always part of my family vacations. I liked reading certain parts of history. And then I actually go to college and I'm not a history major at first. I'm just taking so many history classes because I like them that one of the professors says, well, you might as well double major. And I did. I didn't even think about the history degree, though. I didn't want to teach. What good is this degree? The only thing I would ever get is, well, it's good for a pre-law. Or if you want to keep going, get a PhD in teaching. And neither one of those things appealed to me. And I find that incredibly criminal. And it's not until I do a job I don't like, I quit, I just decide to go back and earn a master's degree in history just to buy some time. And it's there that I discover museum studies, public history. So what is your avenue? And at what point do you realize this could be a career? I could be paid to do something I enjoy.
Yeah. So at Tennessee, I, again, started out as a graphic design major. I'm going to sound really fickle, but I don't think I am. And
we'll be the judge.
Yeah. Okay. The graphic design program at UT was very cutthroat. They the first year was like hundreds of kids and they only selected like 23 or something like that. I was not one of those, but I was still taking art history classes. So I just continued with art history. Those were the classes that I found the most fascinating. The stories behind the artwork that's being created, the material culture that's being studied, that's what I found so fascinating. And UT had a Museum 101, Museology is what it was called, class, and I took it. And that's where I was just like, oh, okay, this I feel like is where I belong. We visited a lot of museums in Knoxville. In fact, we visited the TVA Museum.
Ooh.
Which we had to do a background check to do that. That was fascinating. There was a lot of security for us just to like walk in the building and sit in a conference room and hear from some of the museum staff.
What is the TVA?
The TVA is the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Okay.
Mac, you might know more about
it
than I
do.
Okay.
The TVA is about bringing electrical to rural areas.
Okay.
It's kind of like today how we talk about getting high-speed internet to rural areas.
Okay.
It's expensive. It's not easy to do. Well, right. I guess it's easier with satellites now. But this was an FDR thing trying to economic stimulus. And if you bring electricity to rural places, it's going to better their lives. There's more companies, businesses that can operate. And it's like a 7-state region.
I believe
so. Tennessee River, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So it's not Tennessee per se. I'm kind of surprised about the museum having high security. Was it like in a dam or something?
No, I think it was a matter of like whether, I don't know if they thought we were going to find some like top secret way to destroy a dam. I really have no idea. It didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time. It felt like a lot of unnecessary measures to take against some, you know, 20-year-old college kids, but
nefarious.
Yes, yeah.
So again, I'm fascinated by how those of us stumble into this as a career. As you're going through this, because when you say Museology 101, it wasn't titled that for me, but I was a returning student in grad school, so I was a little bit older than the other kids, but I felt like such the world was opening. We'd meet with 1 week a museum curator. And I'm like, I want to be a curator. And next week we meet with an archivist from the special collections at the university. I'm like, I want to work in a special collections. I want to be an archivist. Next week, a park ranger. I want to wear the Smokey the Bear hat. And it kept changing that entire semester. And I would call my friends and my family. I'd be like, this, oh, I just found what I want to do. And then like the corporate historian for Wells Fargo would come in. I'd be like, I want to be a corporate historian. Coca-Cola, here I come. Or the TV museum in New York City. Was that a similar experience for you, or did you know like historic houses or art, or did you have something specific in mind?
I think I was always drawn to historic houses. When we would take field trips as a kid, the historic houses were the ones that I always remembered. Growing up in Nashville, most of those houses were some part of the Civil War because the Battle of Nashville and Battle of Franklin were so pivotal at the end of the war. So I felt like those stories always stuck with me. At one point, I did entertain conservation. I met a conservator. I did a semester or summer, I guess I should say, in Italy. And a conservator walked us around the town where we lived and talked to us about repairing a lot of the frescoes and artwork and gilding in these churches and palaces. And I found that fascinating. And then I learned that conservation work is just being a scientist.
Oh.
And that's not what I wanted to do.
Data collection.
Yeah.
Yes. So interesting.
So what is it? You work currently in a historic house museum.
Yes.
So give a shout out to that organization and how we'd all go and visit it.
Yeah. So I am the curator of collections and exhibits currently at Historic Mesquite, Inc., which manages two different city parks with two different historic house museums in Mesquite, Texas. It's a suburb right outside of Dallas. It is the quickest suburb to get to outside of Dallas. So a lot of people stop there and actually stay in Mesquite and then do all the things in Dallas because Dallas is so expensive. But both houses were built in the 1870s, one in 1871, the other in 1874. They are both good examples of how people with money and resources, of course, lived at that time. The 1871 house is the Florence Ranch Homestead, and it was a multi-thousand acre park and, or not park, ranch, excuse me. They had sheep. Cattle. It was a working ranch. The the thing they were most known for were the Percheron horses, which was not a horse that I had been familiar with, but they're
very big and very gentle.
Yes. Alana and I actually encountered a Percheron a couple summers ago now when we were touring at the Hermitage. That was one of the horses that was pulling the carriage on our tour. And then the other house that we have is the Opal Lawrence Historical Park. The first part of the house was started in 1874, and it was added on to and grew. The last part was added on to in 1901. There is a little bit of outlaw lore in Mesquite, so that's fun. Bass Reeves robbed one of the trains in Mesquite at one point, and the family in the Lawrence house are actually related distantly to Jesse James. Yeah. So the very top part of the Lawrence house is what's called a belvedere. It's basically a cupola at the top of the house. The fourth story is how I describe it to the kids so they can understand exactly how tall this house is. It has windows on all four sides. Mesquite area at that time, in fact, all of North Texas was prairie land. So there weren't trees blocking the views like you would find today. So the lore was that Jesse James, when visiting his cousins in Mesquite trying to hide out from the law, would go up into the Belvedere and keep an eye out for whether any law enforcement was coming that way. The way we know this is not true is that Jesse James died before the cupola was finished, or the Belvedere was finished in 1901.
Interesting.
And here is the 2 degrees of separation. I worked in St. Joseph, Missouri, which was known for two main things. Well, a lot of things, but the two things mostly in history, the Pony Express is started there, and that's the museum I ran. And a block up the road was the Jesse James house, where Jesse James was killed on the same date, different year, but April 3rd, both things happened.
So fascinating.
2 degrees of separation.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
In the museum world.
You could still see the bullet hole, supposedly. But anyway.
So, you know, your job sounds so romantic and exciting. Yet, I also know the other part of it and something you got to add to your resume this year, or maybe not even this year, the past few years.
Museum work can be romantic and fascinating and very fun. And there is a dirty side to it. Historic houses come with their own problems because they are old. They are falling down sometimes. So we have encountered a lot of pest problems at our house. Both of the houses, actually. I feel like I've somewhat earned an exterminator degree license certification. Anything you want to know about fleas, I can tell you.
So this is how I knew I did not want to be a curator. My first museum gig, because I was in grad school before I ever volunteered or worked at a museum, and I was at Old Cowtown Museum for a year-long internship. They rotated you through each department. And the first department I got assigned to was curatorial. And my first job on the day was working for a registrar who put me in a tiny little room, and I had to, using magnifying glasses and bright lights and tweezers, pull dead bug carcasses off an 1860s rug.
Yes.
Wow.
The whole day.
With a tweezer.
I sat there and said, I'd never want to be a curator.
That is the part of curatorial work that people don't know is very, very common. Yeah.
That's where I knew I wanted to be a jack of all trades.
Yes.
I'd like to work with people, not dead bug carcasses.
Yes.
So talk about historic house museums. And obviously, I operate the Flavelle House Museum, so I love historic house museums. What is the appeal? What mission do they serve? And what is that connection with people? What do you think the important educational mission of house museums are?
I think they can provide a snapshot in history. I think that it is a way for people to connect with their own past. We hear so many people coming through our historic houses and at other historic houses I've worked at who will say, oh, Granny had this. Oh, I remember my grandparents' farm had one of these. And so it's those little connections that people can make with the past. I find that with our new young generations coming up visiting historic house museums, all the third graders in Mesquite come to visit both of our sites, is that they can learn about how life was so different back then. For example, in the kitchen, we can say, what appliances do you not see in here? and there's no refrigerator, there's no microwave. A lot of them say internet, not understanding that internet also involves electricity, even though we've really tried to dig in on, like, there's no electricity, no running water here. How are they living? That's what I find fascinating. As a curator, I also love the stories that objects tell. A cup isn't just a cup. Sometimes it's a mustache cup. Sometimes it's, you know, the cup that so-and-so was holding when something was signed. I mean, there's significance to objects instead of them just being a functional piece.
So how do you get to pick which story gets told?
That is a great question. Because I feel like museums all over the country are struggling with that question right now. Mm-hmm. That evolves over time as well. I think that the stories can change as our appreciation of history changes.
I think our appreciation and our understanding.
Yes, our understanding. So often it's the story of the rich, often white family that lived in the house. More and more sites are trying to incorporate stories of the voices that actually made those houses run. When we say a lot of times, this house was built in 1874. Okay, who built that house? This house didn't just appear. This 21-year-old man who had just been gifted 1 square mile of land didn't just build this himself. Who was doing that? Who was here before people were settling in this area? So I think more museums are trying to incorporate those voices into their stories. But it's an evolution. There are sites that I have visited several times over the years, and every time I go, they've shifted their interpretation just a little bit.
And that is one of the struggles, especially for historic house museums. Are either one of these two sites that you're a part of, are they living history? And then the other side of that, if they're not, how do you entice people to back? What's a different visit? Is it static, or do you make changes? And what are those changes?
That is a fantastic question. And we just spent last Saturday discussing that at our annual board retreat, going over strategic master planning, rewriting our mission statement, trying to figure out how we wanted to rework marketing, essentially, to get more people. Repeat visitors often come, for us at least, from the field trips. The kids don't see everything while they're there. They only see the first floor of one of the houses, of the Lawrence house. And then at the Florence house, they don't see the kitchen at all. But we give every single one of them a free pass to come back and bring up to 5 guests with them. And so that's how we get a lot of people. Ideally, the rooms in the houses are being changed. You can change them out seasonally based on linens and different things on display, textiles. Sadly, I have not been able to do a lot of that because of our ongoing pest problems. Mm-hmm. So it's hard. It is very hard. I know a lot of historic house museums will try to do seasonal planning. So they'll decorate the house for Christmas or do something related to Halloween because everybody thinks historic houses are haunted.
Of course.
Yes. And how do you answer that question when they ask, is it haunted?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I love it. So we're going to bring Jan back for part 2. So don't worry about that. Thank you for being here. I love you. It's been a great friendship. We have so many more adventures to go on, and we're going to keep talking. Museums. I'm going to let them nerd out in another episode.
Yeah, go make some history.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.